Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. When the atheist, after being well-versed in the Vedic scientific knowledge, annihilate inhabitants of different planets, flying unseen in the sky on well-built rockets, prepared by the great scientist Maya, the Lord will bewilder their minds by dressing Himself attractively as Buddha, and will preach on sub-religious principles. Please repeat. When the atheists, after being well-versed in the Vedic scientific knowledge, annihilate inhabitants of different planets, flying unseen in the sky, on well-built rockets, prepared by the great scientist Maya,
The Lord will bewilder
their minds by dressing Himself attractively as Buddha, and will preach on sub-religious principles. Purport. This incarnation of Lord Buddha is not the same Buddha incarnation we have in the present history of mankind. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Buddha incarnation mentioned in this verse appeared in a different Kali age. In the duration of life of one Manu, there are more than 72 Kali Yugas, and in one of them, the particular type of Buddha mentioned here will appear. Lord Buddha incarnates at a time when the people are most materialistic and preaches common sense religious principles. Such ahimsa is not religious principle itself, but is an important quality for persons who are actually religious. It is common sense religion because one is advised to do no harm to any other animal or living being, because such harmful actions are equally harmful to he who does the harm. But before learning these principles of non-violence, one has to learn two other principles, namely to be humble and to be prideless. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. And after being non-violent, one has to learn tolerance and simplicity of living. One must offer respect to the great religion preachers and spiritual leaders, and also train the senses for controlled action, learning to be unattached to family and home, and enacting devotional service to the Lord, etc. At the ultimate stage, one has to accept the Lord and become His devotee. Otherwise, there is no religion. In religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to religious principles. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Ajnana Tirandasya Yadanjana Sadakaya Chakshurum Vitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Damam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedadhar Shri Vasavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So when I first time heard this, that I'm going to be speaking on this verse, I was like, wow, that's quite interesting. So some of you maybe know, I was a very, very big fan of science fiction in the past, especially something like Star Wars, Star Trek, Warhammer series, and so on. So when I heard something about some galactic battles and Lord Buddha appears in such a way that he kind of established some peace by some sort of a scientific way or give some sub-religious principles. I thought, wow, that sounds like Jedi is fighting the Sith and Galactic Republic fighting the Imperium and so on, if anyone is aware of that, of course. So I was a big nerd and geek about the whole Star Wars franchise and series and so on. And so when I heard this story, I was like, okay, let me speak about Star Wars. No, I'm just kidding. That's very interesting. Here it is said, Srila Prabhupada opened up the purport with saying that this is not the same Buddha as the incarnation we had recently, right? The one who appeared 2,500 years ago in the province of Gaya with a specific mission and purpose, desire to kind of re-establish some sub-religious principles. So I've done a bit of research, and at those times, it was basically the Brahmanical culture very much sort of deviated from the main purposes of what it should represent. It is said in the Krishna book, and different acharyas support this statement, that actually Varnashram system cannot be destroyed, never ever can be destroyed. The only way Varnashram system can be destroyed if the head is cut off. So what is the head of Varnashram system? The Brahmanas. So those lower demons which haven't got the power of the Shakti to appear and fight with Krishna, it is said that in the age of Kali, this is supported by this is also saying Chaitanya Bhagavatam, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he speaks about this. He said that these lesser demons will appear actually in the disguise of Brahmanas, and they will take birth in the Brahmanical families to kind of dismantle the Varnashram system in the age of Kali. So what happened in the age of Kali, those 2,500 years ago, they thought that these Brahmanas, they had the potency to kind of perform Vedic sacrifices, to utter the mantras in perfect fashion, to offer animals in sacrifice. But as we know, through Prabhupada many times said that basically these mantras have been there just to prove that the mantras are working. And even when they so-called do Ashwamedha Yajna, which horse sacrifice is involved, or even cow yajna, where they actually offer the cow either got a renewed body, new body, young body, healthy body, or actually appeared even as a human being, which kind of exit from the fire. But those 2,500 years ago, they thought they had the potency in the Shakti to perform these activities, but they had this internal desire just to enjoy the flesh, just to eat meat, and disguise it as a religious principle. Right? So let me tell you an interesting thing, how this is very of significance. Our scriptures, the Vedas, they are very interesting. They're absolutely amazing. One thing when I distribute books, when I say to people, when I speak to people, I say, the Vedas do not discriminate, and they do discriminate. And this is the interesting concept. They do not discriminate in the sense that, obviously, you're a soul, and not only the highly elevated personalities can engage in a practice of Krishna consciousness or in general the Vedic way of living, but anyone can do that. So they discriminate in the sense that they will help you to establish what is your position, in what is the sort of a standard, the level of your consciousness, and based on that they will help you to elevate yourself. So I say to people, do you have problems with alcohol, right? That's a big thing in the age of Kali. And say, I'm occasionally drinking. So that's fine, that's completely fine. The Vedas can help you. You eat meat. Say, I love my steak, this and that. I said, the Vedas can help with that as well. Do you have, let's say, problems with promiscuity? So the Vedas can have a remedy for that as well. Do you have challenges with your mind? Do you have obstacles in your career, in your normal sort of a lifetime, in your normal life? The Vedas can help with that as well. So here we can actually see in this specific section how Buddha appeared for a specific reason. So, and this recent Buddha in this age of Kali appeared again to bewilder and to re-establish and to redirect, right? So in those times, the Vedas are saying animal sacrifice and fine, they are completely okay. So when Buddha appeared, he said, no, they're not fine, they're not okay. So here Prabhupada is saying that he established Upadharma, which is some religious principle called as Ahimsa. part of our four regulated principles is Ahimsa tradition, right? You will not kill, you will not eat meat, fish, or eggs, and so on. So the reason why is this, Prabhupada also understood that the time and age he entered was not the most Vedic tradition. If you go somewhere to Vrindavan, if you go somewhere in, I don't know, in the more pious regions of India, it's no need to request someone to follow four regulated principles. If he's coming from a pious and religious background, if someone is coming from true bona fide Brahmanic family, there's no need to request someone, please follow the four regulated principles. Because it's natural, it's a religious activity. If someone, as Prabhupada was referring here, someone has a common sense, common understanding, he naturally comes to conclusions that killing, slaughtering, and eating animal flesh is not very nice. It causes a lot of havoc, it causes a lot of hatred, animosity, and it's just a terrible thing. So they have this terrible festival in Nepal. And every 5 years, they accumulate a massive amount of animals, specifically like water buffaloes, and cows and sheep, and they just slaughter them. And they just kill them completely. And it's just, you see a big, massive open fields, and just blood and dead animals everywhere. And they call this a religion festival. So for exactly these type of people, Buddha came. And for exactly these people, Buddha was preaching sub-religion. Ahimsa, non-violence. So there's this interesting word mentioned. Ati pralapam, very attractive. Vesham, dress. And bahu bhashyate, will talk very much. So for those people which are atheistic in nature and try to sort of hide their lower nature behind religion, how can you elevate such a personalities? So Krishna is actually presenting in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam how he preaches according to time, place, circumstances, people, and also consciousness. So what is attractive for those which are materialists? What is attractive for those which are not interested in religion? Beauty, wealth, power, presentation, speech. So it is interesting that there was either it was Srila Prabhupada speaking or one of the acharyas, they're actually presenting this very interesting topic. If you speak on spiritual culture, if you speak on religion and dharmic topics, it's not for everyone. When you speak to Brahmanas, you can say like this, this is the way it is, these are the facts, and the Brahmanas will still be attentive. They will still be absorbing. They will be still happy to hear. They will still be very much consciously tuned into the message you deliver. But the lower you go on the Varnashram scale, the more appealing you have to make it. Right? So, depends on which audience you're speaking to, you tailor the message. You don't alternate the message, but you present the message in such a way that's still appealing. So this is the beauty of avatars, and specifically Buddha itself. He's the avatar of perfect presentation. He's the avatar who's eloquent. He's the avatar who's presenting sub-religion in a way to personalities which are not religious at all. So when next time someone says that God is not here for those which are of, let's say, lower caste, or lower consciousness, or lower nature, then you can present Buddha to them. So Buddha was preaching ahimsa, non-violence. He was preaching non-intoxication. He was preaching still the message of the Vedas, yet disguising it in such a palatable way that no, we divert from the Vedas. So this is a mood of a preacher. Preacher can still judge the personality he's speaking to, and yet present the message for the elevation of the person. So I have this sort of a thing which I do in book distribution. Let's say I go to someone and they are not interested in a book. So there's this sort of a gradation, right? They were like, oh, I don't want to take a book. I said, okay, that's fine. That's completely fine. If you can't, you can't. What to do? Can you at least give a donation? Just something, you know, we are monks, just for the charity. Maybe you are not interested in a book, but there will be next a student coming who wouldn't have the money. Can you help that student? Can you help him out? And they said, no, I can't do that. I said, okay, that's completely fine. If you can't, you can't. You have your own reasons. Can you at least can you at least say Hare Krishna? Even if they can't say Hare Krishna, then can you just hold this book for me for 2 minutes? I just really need to, I don't know, tie my shoelaces. Right? So what we do, we try to offer options, gradations of options to people. Why? So we can elevate the consciousness, so in the future they will be to certain degree more eligible to actually grab this Krishna consciousness. So this is what the avatars are doing. This is what Krishna is doing. This is why one after another they appear to accommodate your consciousness. Right? Nara Narayan Rishi, great renunciates. What type of personalities that will attract? Renunciates. Those which are on the path of yoga. Narsimhadev, very strong, very powerful avatar of the Lord. Right? He came and he, first of all, he protects the vows, the boons, the offerings of Brahma to Hiranyakashipu. Right? Why he appeared again? To torn the body of Hiranyakashipu, to the demoniac body. And also, in different Puranas, it's actually said that how he actually killed innumerable demons, different ministers and soldiers of Hiranyakashipu. So which personalities maybe attracted him? Maybe some soldiers, maybe some of them which are after honor. Maybe some personalities which are kind of ready to spill the blood, right? Maybe some Kshatriya type of personalities. So the Lord is here out of his love and endless compassion by saying simultaneously here to facilitate. He's here to facilitate you and all of us. So in this transgalactic warfare which Buddha appeared, the facilitation was, I don't know if it's actually interesting here because Prabhupada mentioned that he will appear in the future. Yes, here it is. In the duration of life of one Manu, there are more than 72 Kaliyugas, and one of them, the particular type of Buddha mentioned here, will appear. So I assume it's a prophecy, rather than he will still appear in next Kaliyuga in the future. So he hadn't appeared yet. The war, the galactic war, haven't really happened yet. What will happen in the future, and he will appear. But there's some interesting things, and I love this sutra which Prabhupada says. It's absolutely amazing. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. I'll repeat that again. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. Okay, let's do it again. But if we can remember it together. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. Let that sink in. I think it's a very absolute, it's a very beautiful message. Unless one is humble and prideless. So, even in Krishna consciousness, right, we have different stages of bhakti, from shraddha to prema. And recently I heard this absolutely amazing concept, which I think is phenomenal. When we heard about shraddha to prema from faith, to some deep ecstatic symptoms of relationship with the Lord on a deeper level, there are different semi-stages between sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nirviti, nishtha, and so on. But there's this interesting concept which says that the actual progress of Krishna consciousness is based on one very unique factor, and that's the first one. That's the shraddha, the faith. So it's not like this process from shraddha to prema, it's on a one line, and you kind of you stop one path or one section and you just go to another, to another. Yeah, it's actually, there are simultaneous lines. And this shraddha, this faith, actually represents your level of progress in Krishna consciousness. To which degree you have faith in the path of Krishna consciousness. So shraddha is the actual discriminative factor of Madhyama, Kanishtha, and Uttama Adhikari. Faith in the process. Faith in the words of the Acharyas. Faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Faith in the association. Faith in the holy name. Faith in the service. Faith in the preaching. Faith in the words of Guru. Does it make sense? So we have different levels and layers of faith. And what's the main factor of faith? It's action, right? So, and sorry to use this word, if we can judge the level of advancement by the activities which are performed, but the underlying message is to which degree that person invests not only the action but the faith within his activities, right? So this is the interesting kind of a concept. So come back to that. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and non-violent. In the modern day and age, there are many different statements. There are many different, denominations, different groups, some religious groups, and they make bold statements. They say, "I love God." Right? "I love God so much you can't even understand." And for those which are Sankirtan devotees, you will constantly meet these personalities. They're screaming on the streets and shouting at you, right? And their level of faith is to slightly derogatory. They want to put you down. That's their faith. That's the Shraddha. So by outreach, they will go to heaven, right? But their outreach is many times just very upsetting and is rather disturbing to the society. At least I felt something disturbed by them. So the interesting thing is, Shraddha and faith and religion is to be seen, and by your actions is to be judged. So there's this Christian proverb that by the fruit you can judge the tree, right? Obviously, Krishna consciously, we try not to. We leave majority of things in Krishna. But here it is. If someone preaches message and love of God and is killing and slaughtering animals, someone who's preaching love of God and is constantly taking shelter of intoxication and harassing others, I'm sorry to say, there is no love there at all. And for personalities like that, let's not speak about God. Let's not touch about the point of God consciousness. Let's speak about now, because your stage is morality. Let's speak about morality. And this is exactly what Buddha did. He was speaking in this galactic setting. He was talking to those which were flying with their aeroplanes from planet to planet. In the technology unknown to us, as is mentioned here. Adrishya would be unseen in the skies, in invisible aeroplanes. They've been traveling from one planet to another. These aeroplanes being kind of created by Maya Dhanava, the great celestial, he's an architect. Yeah. Right? He's an architect.
Actually, he's from the lower planets. Very famous now.
Very famous. He's a great, he's got a lot of intelligence to create all these masterpieces of war and destruction. But simultaneously, he can do also like different towns and palaces and cities and things of wonder. So it just shows that these personalities, these demons, been utilizing the intelligence of Maya Dhanava in a very destructive way. So how did Buddha appear? He appeared for the message of Mati Moham, bewilderment of the mind of those which are seeking destruction. So you can even see how misusing the Vedic tradition for the sake of slaughtering animals and eating their flesh, that was the message of our Buddha in this present age of Kali. In the future, the bewilderment or the utilization of the Vedic knowledge in the form of these great structures, of these great airplanes, rockets, built by Maya Dhanava, Buddha will appear again to bewilder them and to pacify them to a degree not to do these things, not to fight, not to misuse the Vedic tradition in a negative way. So this is the message of Buddha, we can say. The bewilderment of those which are misusing the Vedic scriptures. This is the message of Buddha. Please don't use something which is pure in nature, which is something to rather bring positive change than negative destruction for the sake of your sense gratification, for your perverted the desire to rule the material world and disguising it as some kind of religious activities and religious principles. So this is the message of Buddha. present and in the future. Then Prabhupada continues on interesting points. One must offer respects to the great religious preachers and spiritual leaders, and also train the senses for controlled action, learning to be unattached to family and home, and enacting devotional service to the Lord. So here, Prabhupada is actually, he's a genius in terms of presenting this philosophy. He first established what is the message of Buddha, what are the activities, and then Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So Prayojana is, doesn't matter if you're struggling with these sub-religious principles, yet the ultimate goal needs to be always visible. It needs to be always presentable. It needs to be always seen somewhere in the distant future. Right? Whatever stage you are in, you should always know the Prayojana. Doesn't matter if you have Sarva Kama. Doesn't matter if you have all the desires and material goals. Shri Radha Gopalananda ki, Shri Sitarama Lakshmanamma ki, Shri Goyita ki, Shri Gopalananda ki. So even for us, this is very practically applicable for devotees and practicing Vaishnavas. Doesn't matter which stage in your Krishna consciousness you are. Doesn't matter what struggles you're going through. We should always see and always have that distant goal somewhere. We should always know what is the perfection of practice of Krishna consciousness. And always remind ourselves what we want to achieve. Even if it's so distant that we still possess Sarva Kama, we should know that this is something which is achievable and possible to aspire for. And Prabhupada says in the conclusion, otherwise simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadana, or nearness to religious principles. So to be a vegetarian, to not participate in intoxication, and to be regulated in sexual activities, it's nothing spiritual about that. It's nothing spiritual about these activities. It's just common sense. It's a common sense religion, common sense activities, yet nothing spiritual. The main path of spirituality is connected to Krishna. Prabhupada is saying here that Krishna in the center. And that's the interesting thing about the path of bhakti. If you follow just these four regulated principles without a higher taste, these regulated principles may become very, very challenging, very difficult, very just almost impossible for the majority of the world. If you actually look at it, in the age of Kali, these four, what we call religious principles or regulated principles, are actually the main source of so-called happiness, inspiration. Inspiration in such a way, when I say inspiration, people go to work to earn money. And what do they do with earning those money? They invest them into intoxication. They invest them in a sense gratification. They invest them to expand their sexual appetite and their sexual lifestyle. So money or work, it's not the end, it's just the means. So everything people do, it's means to get happiness, right? So we don't want to tackle the means. We want to tackle the goal and the meditation. What do people want to achieve, right? They want to achieve happiness. So do we. The one thing which we have actually in common with pure transcendentalists, with the Uttamadhikaris, with the inhabitants of the Vaikuntha realm, with those which are in Goloka Vrindavan, there's one thing which we have certainly in common. 100% we have this in common. We are pleasure-seeking in nature. And we'll always be. Because that's in nature. That's the intrinsic part of who we are. We are pleasure-seeking. And even these rockets destroying planets, Maya Dhamma following personalities, they also have one thing in common. They want to be happy. Right? That's the thing. But their perverted happiness reflects in destruction, annihilation, subordination, negation of the Vedic tradition. That's their source of juiciness. That's where they want to get their juice, their happiness. So we then, and everyone else, this is one thing we have in common. So next time we look at some karmis, next time we look at some drug addicts, next time we look at some alcoholics, next time we look at someone with a different variety of perverted desires and tastes in their life, one thing we can draw, that this is one thing which we have to get in common. So we both search for happiness. All of us, we search for happiness. And that's why we need someone like a guru, like a spiritual master, someone like Lord Buddha. When he appeared, he offered that happiness, but he redirected. That's why we need a spiritual teacher. That's why we need devotees around us. We need the devotees to redirect our sense of happiness to a different path, which is not destructive but constructive. Which is not something which will annihilate us and put us deeper into the ocean of material life and deepen our self, how do you call it, like ahankar ego, but something which actually brings us to the real ego, who we are as a spiritual beings, and to draw our source of happiness in a different way, in a different spectrum. So if you again look in any varnashram system, there always is very particularly mentioned what is the source of happiness of different varna and different ashrama, right? And we should all know this. Okay, let's do a bit of an experiment. What is the source of happiness for Brahmanas?
Knowledge.
Austerities. Something else?
Krishna.
Anything else? What is the source of happiness and juice for Brahmanical culture?
Prasadam.
Sorry?
Prasadam.
Chanting.
Prasadam.
Prasadam, yes. Distributing knowledge to others, yes. What is the source of happiness for Kshatriyas? Justice. Right? Protection. Being the strong one and offering that
leadership.
Right? Good management. Seeing that people are happy and satisfied under you. That's their source of happiness. Right? What's the source of happiness for Vaishyas? Cow protection. Seeing those beautiful creatures roaming on the grass, being nicely protected and happy. That's the source of happiness. Seeing beautiful result of your agricultural endeavors. Feeding the other community, right? Who wouldn't be happy when you kind of see from a small seed and it grows into a beautiful plant, tomato, peppers or whatnot, or wheat, grinding it, baking bread and feeding the people. That's beauty, that's happiness, that's simplicity. What is that source of happiness for Shudras?
Serving others.
And also, how do you say, honing their skills. Using their endeavor, their hands, to serve others and other parts of the community. Let's continue. What is the source of happiness for sannyasis? Detachment, right? Preaching. Being sort of aloof, but still being part of the society. For vanaprasthas, what's the source of happiness for vanaprasthas?
Traveling.
Again, austerities. Sort of seeing that the family is taken care of and now is the time to renounce. What is the source of happiness and strength for grihasthas?
Krishna conscious
family. Seeing the children growing up and being Krishna conscious. For brahmacharis, what is the source of happiness for brahmacharis? Prasadam is seen. So one thing you should is for certain. Whenever avatar comes,
what's the real answer?
What's the real answer? Brahmacharya, serving the spiritual master and studying the scriptures and being a menial servant. So all these incarnations, all these avatars, including Buddha, they come to facilitate your happiness, to redirect your misguided happiness. And just to somehow present the Vedic culture in a way that should be presented, according to your level and state of consciousness. Yeah, Shishi Radha Gokula Nandaki, Rata Rashmi Bhagavatam. Did the devotees have any points or questions? Anything they would like to mention? Points? Maybe we can have a mic, please. Charanapu.
You have also interesting class on all that. It's only one thing. Some devotees are kind of not often, but maybe of most engaged in the preaching like vegetarianism and all these morality people and getting tangled really with them. It's kind of a waste of time, kind of like we are seen as spiritual people, so can we continue with our preaching and can we direct those people to such a group, because there are so many people concerned with vegetarianism, environment, regulation of sex life and Buddha and other things. And then look, we waste too much time. So I'm just wondering, when we are approached by such people, like, how should God should feel with that? Make them accept what is happening in principles, but at the same time, we put it down and get lost ourselves in all this.
You see, there was that term which I mentioned, bewildering the mind. So even when you preach vegetarianism or a culture, sort of self-sufficient communities or sex regulations or controlling the mind, the way it's always the one is a tricker, tricksters. You have to trick them. So he said, yeah, be a vegetarian, 100%. It's wonderful. It's a good way of lifestyle, protecting the planet, the animals, and you actually grow compassion within you. But at the same time, say, but you know what's better than vegetarianism? Prasadam. So you can push them. You can basically facilitate their consciousness, their mind. And this is, like, for instance, you have different stages, right? Anamoy, pranamoy, gyanamoy, vigyanamoy, anandamoy. So all these different stages, they're actually stages of consciousness of individuals. And every single stage from anamoy to anandamoy, you can push Krishna consciousness. Like, okay, are you into self-sufficiency? We are as well. But where is it all coming from? How is it possible that the seed, if there's something happening, grows into a plant? Question. You can facilitate and saturate their desire for self-sufficiency, but simultaneously tricking them to Krishna consciousness. Someone might be interested in mind control or be, you know, some kind of a mystical yogi. No problem. We can do that. But check this out. Krishna is Yogeshwara. All these, and you know what? Even better. Mother Yashoda, she's even more powerful than this Yogeshwara. Because when you read Damodar Janani, the pastors of Damodar, he wanted to invoke these mystical powers, but the love of Mother Yashoda said, no, you can't, because I'm going to bound you. So there's many different ways. Like, I always ask people in the streets, what do you do? What's your thing? What kind of a, you know, what you're interested into? And they say, I'm a scientist, or I'm a mother, or I'm a working person, I'm IT, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And the thing is, you dovetail, you understand their needs, their consciousness, their stage, and presenting in such a palatable way that they are ready to accept Krishna consciousness without any sort of a mental harassment. So that's the art of preaching. That you present, because we have it. We have it all. The thing is, what we don't have is the right way how to present it without disturbing them. Thank you for that question. Any other points? Challenge, Pablo?
So, it's a very interesting thing that happiness that we seek.
Very interesting.
I mean, when you observe the world and the way people behave, no idea that actually this happiness leads to misery. So because it's not possible to have material happiness is contaminated happiness. So therefore, and that leads to all kinds of miseries. And you can't have one without the other in material life, happiness without misery, because it's contaminated. Whereas transcendental happiness is free from all such risks. Yes, there are no risks. So that transcendental happiness, that's the one. But the world has no idea. You have no idea that the four simple pillars of life, you know, eating, killing, intoxicating, sex, and what's the other one, gambling. Four pillars of simple activities actually leading people to all sorts of misery. And actually, they're unhappy, so they are looking for this happiness that we were looking for. They're committing more simple activities to actually try to find the happiness. Mm-hmm. And therefore, this downward spiral continues to hellish life eventually. So that's a very interesting point that this happens, that we'll be all looking for it, but in different places as opposed.
Thank you for that point. Yeah. Happiness is... What is the term? There's this Sanskrit sutra. There's a sutra that the soul is naturally pleasure-seeking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anandamaya, sir.
Anandamaya Vyasa.
Anandamaya Vyasa.
Hello. My question is, sometimes, as you were saying, there are people who are not so receptive even to be talked to, because they assume automatically that we're going to talk religion, and they're not interested, or they're simply not interested in anything else. And in occasionally when someone is open to just knowing a little, maybe chat, it is always helpful to relate to them, like on a personal level, instead of giving them so much information, but say how that's relevant to me. And how can you translate that, what you had spoke about today, to, you know, to link that with how I relate to it? Because I've not done that before.
You don't have to be spiritual secret to actually respect qualities of purity. Like, the greatest analogy or the greatest example is Prabhupada. When Prabhupada went to lower insight, there have been a lot of personalities which have not been seeking sort of some spiritual enlightenment, but rather they've been seeking for some mitigation of some sort of miseries in their life. But and Prabhupada, obviously, he was preaching Bhakti Mark or the path of devotional service. But simultaneously, what majority of them have been attracted to is the purity of a devotee. So there's no harm or no shame being just friends with people. And I've seen so many times a book distribution. I distribute a book and I get in contact with people. And I speak with them not on the, always on the premises of some, you know, just showering down the throat, or, you know, you don't know who Krishna is, and my God, you would do different if you know something about karma. And just being friends with them. You being kind, you invite them to prasada, and you just chat with them, you speak with them on their level. And that's the beauty. The character of the Vaishnava doesn't mean that he needs to speak always the Vedas, but he can just be a nice person. And that's what people are interested in. So, because, like, for instance, if I were going no distribution, and if I would just be miserable, rude, and really, really bad with the people, then you are the result of this book. You are the practical example of someone who practices this path. So I don't want to be with you. I don't want to be like you. If this book is what it makes you, then gosh, I don't want it. Like, that's why I'm sorry to say, Christians, once there was this guy came to me, and I had a nice conversation with him, and then in the end he said, I was like, see you later. And he looked at me really like in a malicious way, and he said, yes, but not in heaven. And he started laughing in my face and went away. And I was like, that was so rude. And then I made two steps and I came to him and said, if you're going to be heaven, I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there if people like you are in heaven. And then he just like snapped out of it. He said, I don't want to go there. If people like you with such a heart are like that, I don't want to be in that place where you thinking you're going. So have a good day. So the best way to preach to people or to just be a human being, just be kind, loving, tolerant, patient, simple, as mentioned in this purport. You know, non-violent, loving. And that's what attracts people. And then you know what they ask? Like my dad. My dad, he started chanting Hare Krishna a few years ago. And in his job, people start asking him, like, what happened to you? Like, what do you do? It's like, you know, you look much brighter. And dad's like, yeah, I'm a vegetarian, I'm chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I said, wow, what is that? What is it? Do you have anything, any material? And my dad distributed books in his workplace. And I'm like, that's far out. not on the premises that he came to preach to them, but just because he's a nice person. And people are attracted to it. So Prabhupada was a down-to-earth, wonderful, loving, caring person who came amongst, you know, exploitation and the age of trickery. And he loved those people. He loved them from the bottom of his heart. But his love was based on seeing the soul. How do you say it? Hating the sin, not the sinner. So that's also our mantra. We're hating the sin, not the sinners. So if you're just kind and loving, that's the best outreach you can do. And people receive it.
kind of reiterating that thing that you have us repeat all the time, because you see that Christian, he ended up becoming violent because he didn't have the humility and the pridelessness.
Exactly. Very good point. Thank you for pointing that out. Humility and pridelessness. That's actually, humility is such a wonderful entry gate to Krishna consciousness. And when you see people, when you met them on the streets of Gopesh tradition, and they have this natural humility, tolerance, and you see how they're interested, or they have this adhikar to enter that spiritual book, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavata. You see how these prerequisites, these non-spiritual things, non-spiritual characteristics, are such a wonderful thing for you to start. It's like, in Baladevika Bhusha's commentaries to the Gita Bhushana, there's one reference he's making that the sacred personalities, they're roaming the world and they're seeding the seeds of bhakti anywhere and everywhere. But sometimes it falls on the concrete and sometimes it falls on the fertile soil. So in the fertile soil, it naturally sprouts very quickly. So that entry fertile soil analogy is the humility. That's the best thing to have to enter spirituality, in my opinion.
In order to see it in others, you have to have it yourself.
Very nice. Thank you. John, thank you so much for your attention. Ratra Shiva Bhagavatam Ki, Shiva Prabhupada Ki, Deborah Pramanam Ki.